Thank you very much indeed, Michaela Clark. And it's a little bit of a different start to the 9 till noon show today because our main computer here is just in the process of being fixed. So that will all be up and running very shortly. But our lines are open, by the way, as usual. If you want to WhatsApp and text us, it's 086 60 25,000. 086 60 25,000, and that's the WhatsApp and text number. You can email to comments@highlandradio.com, and our phone lines are currently on the blink, but they'll be working very shortly as well. 07491 25,000, that's the usual number. And we are streaming at the moment, as I say, subject to the internet connection holding up. 086, no, that's not the streaming details, that's our telephone number. The streaming details are on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland. We're across Facebook as well. Now, if you've anything that you want to pass on to us in terms of what the road conditions are like and what have you, thankfully, we've escaped the worst of the weather here, but we aren't immune to it, of course. There is black ice and what have you out there, so be careful if you're out and about. Certainly, some parts of the Midlands and South West got an awful hammering over the last couple of days. Schools closed, operations in certain hospitals cancelled. But as of now, up here, it's not affecting us in that regard. And as you would have heard from the show on Friday, if we are going to get a bad weather, i.e. falls of snow or freezing rain, that's expected over the course of today and tomorrow. But certainly it's going to get very cold at night for the next few days. So no need to be afraid, just plenty of need to be cautious. I went into the shop yesterday just to get one loaf of bread. I didn't want to clean the shelves of bread, just to get a loaf of bread for sandwiches this morning. And there wasn't a loaf in sight. Not white, not brown, not nothing. All the bread was absolutely gone. So I'm not sure if that's just a happenstance of a Sunday evening or if all you out there have tons of bread at home. But hopefully the stocks will be replenished today. Right, let's look at the front pages. Excuse me. Let's look at the front pages of some of the papers today and inside others as well. Donegal County Council set to invest in new technology as well as employing additional specialist cybersecurity personnel in a bid to lessen the threat of cyber attacks. This is Chris Ashmore writing in the Donegal News. The importance of the need to have sufficient measures in place to counter any cyber attacks has been highlighted by senior council officials, including Director of Finance Richard Gibson, and details of plans for the coming year were included in the recent past local authority budget. They also have news of cold weather on the way. A moderate weather warning for low temperatures across Donegal will remain in place for much of this week. Met Éireann is predicting very cold nights up ahead with widespread frost and ice and snow forecasted. On to the Derry news now, and a Derry medical practice is enjoying widespread acclaim for a new community project it has rolled out. The Clarendon Way is a transformative project co-produced and rolled out in Derry's Clarendon medical practice. Roisin Cartmill, Clarendon's senior social work practitioner, explained the project, which began in 2020, now includes patients from Aberfoyle and Quayside medical practices. On to the Nationals now. We'll start with the Irish Times, and government formation talks are just only resuming now. They're not back in the Dáil for a few weeks yet, such is the winter and Christmas break that they enjoy. But the incoming government is likely to expand roads investment after projects were seen to have stalled under the Green Party, senior figures in Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil have said. Now, I don't believe the previous government's policies were at fault for some of the delays in road infrastructure in this county, but certainly if there is a renewed vigour in spending on roads, it's bound to benefit this area, or you would hope it would. With formal talks between the parties set to resume today, transport, enterprise, climate, health and justice will move centre stage after agreement was reached in principle on about half of a new programme for government before Christmas. However, it's highly unlikely that a new government will commit to a swathe of referendums, such as creating a right to housing in the constitution, something the outgoing administration had targeted but ultimately that did fall away. Both Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil are wary of being accused of backsliding on climate policy and will commit to strengthening delivery of green energy and recommit to climate goals and investment for public transport. But while the former Green Party leader and outgoing Transport Minister Eamon Ryan was accused of allowing roads investment to drift, senior sources in both parties indicated a step change in this area has now been considered. Also on the front of that paper this morning, the Central Applications Office system for college entry should be reviewed to ensure it is fit for purpose in light of extensive Leaving Cert reform and a growing number of alternative study pathways the Department of Education report has recommended. We may well talk about that down the line. Plenty of coverage, of course, of the cold snap. An awful lot of conversation on social media about weather warnings and the function of them. I'm not a big fan of getting it wrong, you know. I mean, we've had an awful lot of the boys who's cried wolf. And what we did have across the country was a moderate weather warning, which means get on with your life, right? But be prepared for some dodgy conditions here and there. It's not a red warning, which is effectively a almost like a shutdown or what have you. We did see high levels of snow and ice, which has impacted counties down the country across the Midlands, Southwest, as I mentioned, 40-odd thousand without power, many without water. And that's before the freezing weather has arrived. It's going to be like -7, -8, -9. As I say, I've never been a huge fan of Met Aaron's weather warnings. I think they're a blunt instrument. But in this occasion, certainly in certain counties, some people are actually saying they didn't go far enough. So to some extent, maybe they're damned if they do and damned if they don't. I don't know. But anyway, tens of thousands of people were left without power overnight as heavy falls of rain, sleet and snow swept across the country, with counties in the south and southwest, east the worst affected by the cold snap. Schools in several counties are expected to stay closed today, with a decision left to individual boards of management depending on local factors. ESB Network said it was working hard to restore electricity, but that many of the 59,000 home, farms and businesses affected would not be reconnected for several days, and that the weather warnings in place indicated that more people could lose power. Most of those affected were in the counties of Cork, Kerry, Limerick, Tipperary, Kilkenny, Carlow, Leash and Wicklow. Around 15,000 water customers in Dublin, Cork, Limerick and Tipperary were without supplies yesterday evening, with another 33,000 in those counties, along with Wexford and Kerry, at risk of losing water due to high demand and bursts on the network. And of course, what happens is, and I think I might have been guilty of this 20 or 25 years ago, is people tend to leave the tap running so it doesn't freeze. I seem to recall somewhere in the back of my head that I may have done that once. I don't feel great about it, but anyway, I possibly did. We'll keep you up to date, of course, with how it's going to affect us here in the local area of the Northwest over the course of the next few days. We'll try and keep it as realistic and reasoned as is possible, but if there is caution required, we'll get that out there too. The Irish Daily Mail this morning, more community service and less jail to cut costs. What do you think about this? I don't think jail's really working for many, is not working as a deterrent anyway. So whatever hope we had with jail community service might not do the trick. But anyway, shorter jail sentences and more community service should be introduced in a no-brainer for the next government, the head of Irish Penal Reform Trust has said. Chief Saoirse Brady told the Irish Daily Mail the taxpayer forks out nearly €85,000 to put someone in prison for a year, but a probation order or supervision in the community costs less than 10% of that. She argues that as well as cutting costs, the approach would help tackle prison overcrowding at a time when there are almost 500 more inmates behind bars than there is space for, with around 300 of those sleeping on mattresses or floors. However, politicians have pushed back against the idea, arguing that there must be a strong deterrent against crime. Fine Gael TD Michael Cargi said, "Justice has to be served for those that are law-abiding citizens. They want to see tough sentences out in place to make sure there is a deterrent for those who do commit crimes." I mean, people's views are nuanced, though. I mean, if someone is constantly committing crime in and out of jail, that's not working, right? I don't know how you deal with that longer sentence or what have you. But then there are people in jail that shouldn't be in there, or there are those in jail for long periods of time that less time would do. I mean, it just has to be a little bit more nuanced, surely. There can be an approach that works better for the public. It helps rehabilitate people if that's possible, and eases the pressure on the prisons at the same time. The Irish Daily Mail, it seems it's all too regular, but it almost seems, you know, once, twice, three times a week that a woman dies in violent circumstances on the island of Ireland. And again, the same has happened. Gardaí have identified a chief suspect in the murder of a young woman who was stabbed to death. Paula Canty, who would have turned 32 today, was found with a stab wound to the chest in an apartment in Bridwell Lane, Mallow, County Cork, at 10:30 a.m. on Friday. The investigation is focused on a man she knew. Officers responded to a 999 call in which it was claimed Miss Canty, who had a long list of convictions, although I don't know why that's listed in the paper. But on examining the scene, they realised she had been murdered. Detectives now want to speak to those who last saw her live. On Friday, Gardaí conducted door-to-door inquiries and attempted to harvest CCTV footage from the area. More on the weather in all of the papers, as you can imagine. The Irish Daily Star, the worst snowstorm in years, caused travel chaos yesterday, forcing drivers to abandon cars as forecasters warn of even worse weather ahead in the coming days. And it is kind of interesting. And as I say, I don't know if it is of sort of the boy who cries wolf, but there's so many videos on social media of people out in the cars trying to drive up hills or around junctions and simply stuck. They could not move. The cars aren't, and the tyres aren't built for the conditions in which they were trying to drive. But the county is set to experience a nationwide freeze-up with temperatures struggling to rise above zero even during the day, making travel extremely dangerous in some areas. And did you watch, to try and warm the cockles at least of your heart, if not your home, did you watch Dancing with the Stars last night? It's not a programme I've ever watched either on RTE or on the British TV channels, but of course there's a lot of Donegal interest in it. Danny Carroll's in it, and so is Mickey Jo Hart. Dancing with the Stars brought a warm glow to a freezing Ireland last night as it returned to our screens. Host Jennifer Zamparelli and Doreen Garrahy opened the show in dazzling dresses surrounded by male dance pros before the backdrop lifted to reveal judges Brian Redmond, Lorraine Barry, Arthur Gurunlian, and former professional dancer Karen Byrne, a new addition to the panel. Buster Brady, aka Mrs. Brown's Danny O'Carroll, was the first to dance, getting 22 points. I missed Danny. I don't know how, obviously 22 is not fantastic, is it? Or is it? But anyway, he got 22 points for a smooth foxtrot with his partner, Salam Chachua. How else? How did I did see Mickey Jo Hart? I think he did really well. It was a tough old, routine, isn't it? I wouldn't fancy trying to do it with the energy levels that's required. But anyway, Eurovision star Mickey Jo Hart, he danced a Paso Doble to Teenage Kicks by The Undertones with new pro Daniela Rose, getting 19 points. So he just came up a little bit short of Danny O'Carroll, and they're friends, of course, and they're getting to know each other even better, I'm sure, through that process. But there will be a bit of bragging rights, I've no doubt about it, for Danny beating out his mate there. Right, okay, we are going to take a break. Just to let you know, how do you contact the show? If you want to WhatsApp or text, it's 086 6025000, 086 6025000. That's to WhatsApp and text. If you want to give us a call, the phone lines are beginning to function, I believe, now. 074 91 25000, 074 91 25000, if it is how you get in touch with us. Right, okay. In fact, we'll not take a break at the moment. We'll move to our first guest, who is Mark Doherty, Managing Director of the Century Cinema Complex. Thanks so much for joining us, Mark, on this cold morning. How are you getting on?
Not too bad. Good morning, sir, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. It's good to have you. It's good to have you on the show. Right, we've spoken in the past about the cinema world and the stuff that you're doing. Recently, you added extensively to your business, which is fantastic news, isn't it? It's reinvestment in the area.
It does.
But it brings its own issues. But before we get to those issues, talk to me about this extension and how has it been going?
It's been going very well, thank God. We're very pleased with the way it started off. We had a very good Christmas. Reaction to it seems to be quite good. So what we did, we took the old backstage bar and restaurant and kids' soft play centre, We put on a rather large extension, so moved all the soft play to a new building. We added in then, we added in some bars, we added in some high-tech golf, we added in some crazy golf, we've added in some virtual reality darts, we've added a shuffleboard, so an amusement arcade. So what we tried to do is give this space for young adults to meet, to congregate, to have a bit of fun, and to spend some time with their friends and family.
Yeah, okay, so all going well, hugely popular, loads of bookings. But staffing.
Yeah, we're in that phrase. We're probably sort of caught ourselves. It went better than we actually expected it to do, and we had certain plans laid out of how we thought it was going to do and what we were going to need. And then we opened the front door and suddenly realised, well, okay, all those plans don't actually work, and we need to change how we're doing things. So now we're in the process of we've moved a lot of staff into more senior roles, into different positions. So now we're trying to backfill all those people and behind it. So we've a number of roles that we're trying to fill to meet the demand.
And have they been advertised, and what's the response been like?
They went up last Thursday, Friday, I believe. Response has been fantastic. The number of people looking for them is really surprised. It really surprised us, the number of people, because we thought we were going to struggle to recruit for certain roles. But the response has been absolutely brilliant. But we're looking for those key people with from the hospitality sector who have experience in that sector and want to move on in their career. So that's what we're trying to do.
Am I recalling correctly, did we speak in the past about a massive oversubscription of jobs that were advertised? Like, was that me?
Yeah.
And you? Do you remember? Like, it's going back some time. It was a different era, but I seem to recall there was a certain amount of jobs and then there were a massive amount of applications. Am I remembering correctly?
There is. We tend to find that given the industries we're in and our location, for those entry-level positions, the number of young people looking for those, and we're talking, you know, young people who are 17, 18 at still secondary school moving into third level, the number of those applicants for those jobs is just absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, people give it, young ones don't want to do it. Well, that's not our experience. Mm. Our experience of that 17, 18, 19 age group is just fantastic, because we have some absolutely brilliant people down there. And we find that they're not only are they studying, whether that's second level or third level, they're managing their social life and they're working down with us. And we're not a soft touch. We drive fairly hard, and they are incredibly driven, incredibly well balanced, and just a joy to work with.
So where are there gaps, Mark, in terms of positions and being able to fill them?
There's gaps probably in the hospitality sector and the more senior roles, so those supervisors, those managers, who you would see on the floor actually doing the jobs. I think what happened was during COVID, a lot of those people moved into different industries and different fields because the hospitality industry was gone. It was shut down. It was completely gone. So they moved into other areas. They moved and to work on different jobs, Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, and they thought, well, why are we going back to work on weekends? To heck with this. I like what I'm doing. I'm working 9 to 5. I'm home in the evening. I'm off Saturday. I'm off Sunday. So those experienced people is what we're looking for.
Yeah, and it sort of coincided too with a lot of jobs being available, different types of jobs as well. It's not just that area. I think people in lorry drivers, for an example, security staff, you know, some of that kind of those areas, people had an opportunity to say, right, I want to do something else.
Yeah, they did. And, you know, I want to change career. And a lot of people did jump careers as a result of COVID, whether that be from hospitality, whether that be from office jobs. A lot of people decided, well, you know what, I've been doing this for 10 years or 15 years. Let's try something else. So a lot of people have done that. And we've seen that throughout the country, that people have moved from one industry to another industry. So now you do see certain industries are struggling to get people into those roles.
Are you having to adjust those roles in terms of, you know, the more senior roles whereby it would require a lot of evening or weekend work? I have spoken to those in the restaurant industry, and they've said part of the reason that they're only open like Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday now is that, you know, to get the right staff, they're having to give them a certain amount of time off. That the days of working them to the bone are long gone.
Yeah, those days went out the window 10, 15, 20 years ago. You know, they really did. We tried not to operate that way. We always tried to work on the basis that anyone who worked for us, that, you know, they got X number of weekends off, they got X number of nights off. that, you know, those days and nights off came together. So you weren't discovering that you were working Monday, Tuesday off, Wednesday, back Thursday. You know, you can't expect people to work like that. Who wants to work like that?
Yeah.
You know, I work like that and I'm stupid. You know, so if somebody's going to come in and do a job, you have to try and give them decent conditions. Within the industry that you're working within, you have to try and make sure that they get their time off when they want it and when they need it. Now, sometimes that works, sometimes that doesn't, but there's compromises that have to be made there. And we've always tried to make those compromises so that people know, well, you know what, I'm off every third weekend, so I'm going to be able to plan that I can go with the family, I can go with the kids, I can go with the girlfriend, I can go with the boyfriend, that I have that Saturday and Sunday to do what I want to do.
Yeah, I hear you. Okay, so just to throw it out there once again, you know, what kind of staff are you looking for? What kind of offers have you on the table?
We have some senior roles looking for. We're looking for maintenance engineers with a sort of an electronic mechanical background. We're looking for chefs. We're looking for duty managers. We're looking for waiters and waitresses, and we're looking for entry-level staff as well. So the main areas are those more senior roles is where we're trying to cover.
And it sounds, too, like the structure of the company is that there is a progression opportunity. I know I speak to an awful lot of people, and I have some of them under my own roof, who are keen to be able to progress within an organisation. Yours is that type of organisation, isn't it?
Yeah, we are. Well, we've grown that much over the last 15, 20 years. You know, we've progressively grown all the way. And we like to try and promote our you know people from within because they know the company, they like where they're working, and then we like to support them by giving them the training courses that's going to progress them on through their career. So it's an easier way to do it if you have the right people there within the company to do that. You know, you can have a whole lot of people who are qualified for a job, but if they walk in the door and they start it and they take one look at you and go, well, I'm not working for that. And that's as much got to do with working a job as the qualifications.
Yeah, for sure. And also, I must say, the schools and colleges are great, but you can't beat working in front-facing roles. Young people, I think, particularly just in terms of personality development and what have you, I think it's really important.
It's really good. It gets them talking to people. It gets them interacting with
people. Which is something that we're doing less of in our early years, so that as soon as you can start doing that, the better.
Yeah, you're stuck behind a screen and you don't forget. And then we offer a lot of on-board training with the ETB, who are absolutely fantastic. Some of the practical training courses they're delivering with us is just
all right.
Phenomenal.
If anyone wants any more information on what's available, Mark?
It's on our social media. You can take a look at there, and any applications, pop it into jobs@centurycinemas.ie.
All right, jobs@centurycinemas.ie. Cinema or cinema?
Cinemas. Cinemas. Everyone always gets caught in that.
But
S
I don't
the
know.
End.
We work, both work. You see.
Yeah, they do. They
All
do.
Right, Mark. Thanks very much indeed. I appreciate
Cheers,
it. That's Mark Doherty there. Excuse me. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number, or you can give us a call on 07491 25,000. Of course, it's interesting that this morning's survey from Eyeball, results show that this new tax is not reducing litter; it's just costing hardworking people a fortune in time and extra cash, and taking up a drawer or a cupboard in the house as well. It is reducing the litter in terms of the cans and the bottles, according to Eyeball. Listener, but it is not reducing the overall level of litter. How that works, I'm not quite sure. Are they saying it's one litter is being replaced with another type of litter? I'm not sure. Yesterday, says listener, I was held up for over a mile on the Stranola Road by two cyclists who cycled two abreast. They made no attempt to go single file and let traffic flow. Is it legal for this to happen? I believe it is. We've covered that quite extensively. And more of your comments coming in. Okay, now we move on in the programme, and we can say good morning to world professional darts player Daryl Gurney. Good morning, Daryl. Thanks so much for your time.
No problem. Good morning. I hope you're having a great morning.
I am indeed, and had a great Christmas watching the darts. It was a funny old tournament for you, wasn't it? You were throwing great, it seemed, in your last game. You made something of a comeback and then just missed out on those fractions that make all the difference. Your reflections on your tournament, Daryl?
I played really well the first game, and then I was just too slow of starting, and Johnny's finishing was great, to be honest. I missed a one dart at 120 to make a 2-all in a set, and he took out a 160. So it was kind of going against me, but I knew that I still had a bit of belief in me that I could come back. And unfortunately, I missed them six darts to go all the way to the to win them by two legs.
How do you deal with that? You know, building up to the biggest tournament of the year, getting so close. You know what you're capable of, but it just doesn't go your way in the day. How long does it take to bounce back from that?
To be honest, it's around Christmas. It doesn't really take that much. Okay. I come back, I see me wee boy, and everything's good. At the end of the day, I think it was about half an hour. I was just quiet for half an hour after I got beat, after Johnny's game. And then, to be honest, after that, I went and got a Nando's and everything was right in the world again.
That's all it takes. All it takes is a Nando's or whatever your preference is. I think you're hovering around the mid-20s in the rankings at the moment. What's your hopes for 25? Because 24 was a... just as a viewer, you would have a far better insight this as a player, of course. But, you know, I mean, the seeds sort of, you know, stood their ground for the World Championships, but it seemed a little bit all over the place throughout 2024 with, you know, some surprise winners, people getting knocked out early that were expected to win and so on and so forth. Your reflections on 2024, I suppose, personally, and what you're looking forward to for 25?
Well, 24 was a great year for me. As in, I was trying to always improve my floor game so I could get further up the rankings. There's so much rankings that goes on. So you've got like the Pro Tour rankings, which was away from the TV, and then you've got a European ones for Euro Tours, and then you've got the world rankings, and then obviously you got to prepare for all the main majors. But I wanted to try and get myself into the top 16 away from the TV so I could automatically be playing on a Saturday, not on a Friday, at the Europeans. And I've done that for the first two this year. So wherever they may be, I don't be playing on a Friday. I'll be playing on a Saturday. But it means I still got to win or you don't get the ranking money on your ranking. So we all still got to win. But I just kind of take it in small steps now. I kind of look at 25. I want to improve from 24 and just look where I can improve. I want to keep my ranking away from the TV so I'm in all the Euros playing on a Saturday. And I want to kick on, do better in the Europeans and also discover better form on the major tournaments, because there's a lot of tournaments this year. I played great in the first game, and for whatever reason, I didn't play so well in the second game, but I don't know why that is. I definitely need to improve that and look at where I was going wrong there.
I was listening to Eddie Hearn commenting about the growth of darts. He was talking to an American broadcaster, I believe, and he pointed out, which I thought was really quite a remarkable statistic, that Matchroom make twice as much money from darts as they do boxing. And when you consider the names they have in their boxing ranks as well, as I say, that took me by surprise. I don't think people necessarily know how much work you guys do in terms of throwing in days that you aren't on telly, for an example. Is there a sense that the success of the sport, the players are successful, are rewarded enough for it, Daryl, that there is that trickle down when you have the head of the organisation able to boast of the success of it? Do you have to work too hard to make a living, or are you happy out?
Well, it's more like I'm not really a natural player. I've always got to work on my game, so I practice more or less every night.
Yeah.
And I'll see, if I was away playing for 4 days there, I'll be like a hairdresser sometimes. I'll take a Monday off. And but I'll only have a Monday off, but I'll not miss another night then. But most nights consist of 2 to 3 hours every night. But I have seen that interview that you're talking about, but no, I've known for years that whenever Eddie or his dad came in and gave us a meeting in the PDC, they would always say that the only thing that beats darts viewing on TV is the Premier League football. So I already knew it. I'd done everything else, the boxing, snooker, tennis, everything else, and golf, but which is mad whenever you think on it. But darts has been on a mad rise ever since I started. Every year I've joined, not just the standard, but the popularity of darts has grown every single year. And I think whenever I start this year now, this will be my 12th year or something. So, yeah, no, darts is on the rise. And obviously with Luke Littler, the sensation... the sensation he is, it's put her on to just mad ratings. I remember, I think last year for the viewings for the final, I think they were selling like 4 million. And they got to the quarterfinal or the last 16 stage this year, and they says the viewings have went up 84% from last year. So I think that's to do with a lot to do with Luke Littler and also just the interest that's in the sport at the moment.
Yeah, just a couple of questions before we get to the final, if you don't mind. A decision is due in the not-too-distant future about, I suppose it's to match the growth of the sport, moving it out of the Ali Pally, which would be like moving the FA Cup final out of Wembley or moving the snooker out of the Crucible for many people. But as a thrower yourself, as someone involved in the game, what would your views be about it maybe moving to a bigger venue?
I mean, I'd be all for it, but I think if it did move, it would maybe move to another venue in London somewhere where it could have the capacity to make it bigger. But for now, I would say it's definitely going to stay in Ali Pally. I love Ali Pally. Ali Pally is the best venue to play darts in for a crowd. I love the noise of the crowd. There's places that's maybe twice the size of Ali Pally crowd capacity, but they're never going to be as loud as Ali Pally, as with the ceilings. They always talk about how loud it is in there, but I think it's to do with the roof. And there, the volume keeps on bouncing off the ceiling, come back down, and it holds the volume in the room. But no, I love Ali Pally. My views on is wherever they tell me to play, I'll play.
But, exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of the noise in the Ali Pally, one of the images that sticks in my head is your old mate, Gerwyn Price, with his headphones on. I'm just wondering, what's the story with the boisterous crowds? You know, some giving out that the ref doesn't quiet them down. Those days are gone. I mean, but what's it like playing with that level of noise? And does it matter whether the fans are with you or against you, Daryl, at your level you're operating at?
It definitely does. It's like I'll put Minehead and Ali Pally together. If they're with you, it's great. It doesn't matter where you are. And the more people, the better. Because you prefer a mass of noise coming at you. Because if there is somebody shouting against you, you can't hear them. It drowns out. But whereas Ali Pally, you could literally, the people can literally reach and touch the stage where they're that close to you. Where if somebody in the front table was saying something to you, you can hear them. Right. Whereas if you play in Minehead, they've kept the stage away from the crowd. So if there is somebody at it, you actually can't hear them. It's just sometimes the venue lends itself to, you can either hear them or can't hear them.
Right. So in terms of the tournament itself, do you watch the darts when you're out of the competition?
I usually don't, but I did watch a couple of games after I got beat.
Yeah, and just to, as it will go straight to the finals, I don't want to take too much of your time, Daryl. But I mean, on Friday, a colleague here, Mark, was speculating, and I just thought MVG with his experience, with the stage, with the way he was throwing, that he just would have enough that Luke Littler would fall short. And it goes to show how stupid I am, right? But what we saw was a performance from someone who was playing so freely. His double tens were amazing. The pressure didn't get to him. He seemed to behave really well on the stage. It was really a remarkable performance from a 17-year-old. Actually, you know, for someone of any age, Daryl. But as someone, as you say, you know, you have to work at it to stay at the level that you're at. When you look on, what do you think?
Oh, well, I watched him, and to be honest, I knew that he was always going to win the final for me. Mm. He played a great friend in Aspinall. They're under the same management, so he was all let's say smiles and being not really in the zone he needs to be to win. But he was playing incredible darts anyway, so he didn't need to be. And then in the semis, he played Bunton. Which again, it's one of his big mates, so he was under no real pressure, and he's obviously friends with Michael, but because he's with Target, he would see Nathan and see Stephen all the time, whereas Michael's with Wimmel, like myself, and I knew he would have that extra bit of focus whenever it came to the final. But I thought he was superb. after the first set, one of my sisters texts me, what do you think the result is? And I just seen how Michael was slow at starting and he was struggling. I think he was down to 18% on his doubles to start off with. I said to myself, it's going to be 7-3, and I'm not just saying it because that's how the result was.
I want to see the betting slip.
If you asked me before our dart was thrown before the final, it still would have been luck, but I still would have said maybe 7-4, 7-5, but just how Michael started and how slow he was, I knew that he was going to struggle early on, and you can't do that against Luke. He was so determined, he's so calm, and he's so focused in every single leg. And obviously, whenever you've got the scoring power, he does more or less nearly hitting a 180 every other leg. It's hard to beat, especially whenever he's hitting a 180 on his throw.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. With the likes of yourself and the faces that are as familiar now as footballers' faces, that's the way the sport has grown, or Gaelic football players, depending on what sport you're following. The more eyes that are on it, and Luke Littler brings an awful lot of eyes, it's going to benefit everyone, I'd imagine. All right, listen, it's been absolutely great chatting to you, Daryl, to get your insight into how your career's going. We wish you the very best for 25. Always enjoy when you're throwing as well, because it feels local, if you know what I mean, if you allow us that. So we want to see loads of success from you in 25, and we'll be cheering you on.
Cheers. Thank you very much, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Daryl. Best wishes to all. That's World 25 darts thrower Daryl Gurney from Derry. His reflections on his career is 24, heading into 25, and the World Championships there as well. Enjoyed that. Thanks very much, Daryl. Right, okay. Hi, Greg. There really needs to be something done about the footpaths around Letterkenny Town when the weather turns frosty, says this listener. Just left my partner to work this morning, and we've seen three people fall on the footpath due to ice. Surely the council could provide a quad to travel around the town's footpaths and grit the footpaths with salt and grit. It was terrible seeing people struggle to get to work this morning. I'm not sure how you resolve that, because if the council took on the footpaths of Letterkenny, then the footpaths of Donegal Town need to be sorted, and Ballyshannon and Bundoran and Dunlow and Ballymfaestre and all are Buncrana, Carndonagh. So, you know, you couldn't just do Letterkenny and nowhere else, because everyone has equal rights to get about. Could we do something whereby everyone takes responsibility for the footpath in front of them in their properties, or be incentivised to do it? I don't know. Is there a solution there? I just can't see a scenario whereby we could ever have the council doing footpaths. It's probably really quite sad to view it like that, but that would just be my gut feeling there. Many people need to get onto the main road to get to work in the morning. Why are rural roads in Donegal not gritted to enable this? We must be the only country who comes to a halt for bad weather. I suspect we're not. Again, it's about resources and the amount of roads we have. I sound like a council spokesperson. It's not my intention, but I think we'd all like our local road to be done. It's just not possible, is it? Maybe it should be. I don't know. Any advice for this listener? I paid money for a Christmas dinner dance. The band rescheduled due to the weather. The rescheduled date didn't suit me. I was told that I wasn't entitled to my money back. Am I entitled to my money back? The hotel said that money was towards the deposit, and the band feel that I'm entitled to my money as I did not receive anything. I suppose it depends on the T's and C's of the deposit and what you've paid and what have you. All right, you're tuned to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. We are just working through a few technical issues here, so apologies. Well, you're not getting ads. That's the only difference, really. Everything else seems to be functioning okay. And we're going to take a piece of music here as well whilst we line our next guests up, which means we're going to have to mute on the stream. My apologies for that. But we have here Billie Eilish. We'll be back after this. I want you to stay till I'm in the grave, till I rot away, dead and buried, till I'm in the casket you carry. If you go, I'm going too, 'cause it was always you. And if I'm turning blue, please.
in was
okay, we are pretty much back up and running all around now. Good morning, Krishna, I'm speaking to.
Yes.
Krishna.
Good morning.
Good
how
morning
are you?
To you. My apologies there. There's just two names here in front of me. Now, you are the owner of a restaurant in Gortahawk. Is it the... What's the name of the restaurant?
Taz Indian.
Okay. Right. Now...
Yeah, that's right.
Something's going around on the internet that's proven problematic for you. What is the story?
Yeah, we just got the viral and the... social media that the name of the there is the person of the name he's in the UK that is just give me a second, so somebody make a viral video, the Abdul Aziz, the name of the kind she's working here, and he's charged for the the reps case in the UK.
Yeah.
But
so,
I would like
so,
to say
yeah,
that
no,
it's
I'll
all...
tell you what, it's Krishna, I'll set this up if that's all right, sorry, because we were just getting our notes together here. Effectively, everybody would be very familiar with the massive conversation that's happening at the moment in relation to the British government's reaction to grooming and rape gangs. It's all across the British media. Elon Musk is commenting on it and what have you. Now, there is someone has made a video claiming a person is part of one of these Rochdale grooming gangs. He's quite high up in it, apparently. And this false claim has been made that this individual is working at the Taj Takeaway in Gortahawk. And you're saying this person's never worked there. You've no connections with him at all. Do you know the person? Is it all just a load of nonsense?
Yeah, this is all the fake news. I would say to the people, the name of the person, what's here on the social media, never worked in my company since I started that business in May 2016. This is all the false information spread through the social media to harm our business and employee. And I already all reported to the Gadi, and I just leave a message on the Facebook page as well. And I got a good response as well, because everybody, especially the local people, knows, because they are all time the customer here, and they see who working and not, you know. And I'm here from since 9 years, and normally the local people knows, and always I got a very good support from the local communities for the business and for our employee. So this is all the false information going through the social media. That's not the truth.
What kind of an impact has it had on your business, or if you had any contacts for people, or what has been the situation?
Yes, the situation is from last 3 days, and the Saturday was the very worst, because I got a lot of call and threat, and even some people say, like, they're keep asking where is the gang, is you related with the gang, and we will burn up the place, and some people are threatened. But from yesterday it's a little calm down, and yesterday also still get a couple of calls, but not that much, but it's still a little bit fear, because the employee are a little bit unfair. And but I hope they will sort out everything, because the mostly people knows now this is the pick. And what is shared through the Twitter, that is the only verified account, and I check in as well myself, and there is nothing else. Just the writing about these people's working in the past, and that's all I see in the and I think that's the fake account and unverified account. And I would like to message to everyone that please don't believe and share that type of false information.
Krishna, just more generally, are you concerned with the anti-Indian, anti-Pakistani, two very separate countries, don't get me wrong, anti-Muslim rhetoric that's ongoing at the moment, in that everyone, it seems certainly on some accounts, anyone with that background is being grouped as problematic individuals? Is that something that concerns you as an individual, or do you believe this will pass?
Not really believe that anything has got seed. I'm here from nearly 15 years, and I don't believe at all. Like, you know, I would say, like, I had never ever problem with the personally and with the business. Just, this is my first things in my business.
Milford Tiles at Milford.
Kind of my.
Yeah. Okay. Listen. Thank
kind
you.
Kind of message. Yeah.
Okay, listen, we have to move on, Krishna. Thank you very much indeed for your time. He just wanted to clarify that the image circulating, and it's a post that was on social media, Rochdale grooming gang members still not deported 10 years after attacks, and someone on social media said, can you please highlight this? This man pictured is the master of the Rochdale grooming gangs and is working in Taj Takeaway Gorta Hawk. And we've heard from Krishna there, who was the owner of that. He says this person does not work there. Right. You are tuned to the 9 till noon show. We're going to take a quick break.